It's time to become a member of Playvolution HQ and Explorations Early Learning. There's a free option and three paid patron level options. All come with free stuff and ongoing automatic training and merch discounts. For as little as a dollar a month, you can become a patron. That supports our work and you get premium stuff like early access to fresh podcast episodes. Go to explorationsearlylearning.com/membership or click the link in this episode's description to learn more. All the cool listeners are doing it. On with the show. Childcare Bar and Grill podcast. Jeff Johnson with you live from upstairs studio in the snuggery along the Gulf of Mexico with me, Tamar Jacobson. Hello, Tamar.
Hi, good morning.
And our guest for this episode of our kind of series within the podcast, Early Learning Journeys, we've got Jennifer Whiteford Hauk. Did I say it close to the right, Jen?
That's right. That's right.
All right. All right. So we're going to get to Jen's story in a minute. I had a fun experience yesterday that I got to talk about. I got to get Tamar's take on. When it was happening, I was thinking about Tamar. So I was out kayaking again yesterday, my first sunset kayak. And I'm about an hour before sunset. And I ended up spending about 90 minutes on the water where I never went more than 5 minutes without seeing a dolphin or dolphins doing all kinds of neat dolphin stuff within like 5 to 100 yards away from me. So they're just all over the place. And it's just beautiful. And there was they're playing with each other and they're eating and just carousing. But then I think I saw dolphins playing with birds, because there were some seabirds. They would swoop down towards the surface, and then a dolphin would surface, and then they'd fly up, and then they'd come back down, and the dolphin would surface again, and they'd fly back up. And then one time the dolphin rolled over on its belly, and the birds kind of pecked at it a little bit, and then they flew away because the dolphin splashed. And it was amazing. And Tamar and Jennifer, I want those dolphins to be my friends. I want them to come and play with me. And when I got thinking about everyone needs attention, Tamar, is the idea. I've got about exactly the right amount of human attention in my life right now, maybe a little bit more than I would like. And but I would really love those dolphins to pay attention to me. So in your book, were you talking about human attention or the dolphins get included?
I think dolphins can be included. Absolutely. You know, I have cats, and I used to be a dog person. And so in the beginning, I would reach down to pat the cats and they would get up and walk away. And I would be absolutely devastated. I took it so personally and I was so upset. And yeah, I think, you know, these are souls. These animals have souls, I think. And I think that we want to connect with anything that's soul-like.
Anything.
And dolphins certainly are soul-like.
Yeah. And so any suggestions on how I can make them my friends? I don't want to seem too needy.
Needy is good. Needy, I mean, I understand your fear of being vulnerable, but I mean, I think needy is just another way of being vulnerable. It's just opening up and saying, you know, I need you. It's just an intimacy thing.
Are dolphins going to respond to that? I thought maybe I should start carrying herring in my pockets or something.
That's a really good way to get to them, I'm sure. But you know, you should look it up. I mean, you probably have already.
Oh, yeah.
People play with dolphins a lot, don't they?
Yeah. And I looked at some kayaking web, you know, forum type things. And there's people like that, you know, they spend more time in the area and the dolphins get to know them. And they do things like they'll speed, like they're coming straight at you on a collision course, and then they'll stop right before they get to the, like it's almost like an invitation to play chase. is what it reads like to me. So I'm just, hey, podcast listeners, stay tuned because I'm going to try to befriend my dolphin friends. But
wonderful.
It's going to be, I haven't got any good pictures yet because I'm so mesmerized looking at them.
I read a book called A Year by the Sea about a woman who goes, actually it's on the East Coast, New Hampshire area, Maine. And she spent a year alone in a house and she would swim with the dolphins every day.
You can do it, Jeff.
I've got something
to look forward to. Got something to look forward to.
Everyone needs attention.
That's right, including Jennifer here. That's why we got her with us. We want to give Jennifer some attention.
I don't know. I'm no dolphin.
I'll be the judge of that. Tomorrow, where should we jump in with Jennifer?
Hey, Jennifer, tell us how you came to early childhood education.
Oh, wow. That's kind of a lengthy story, I suppose, but we'll give it a go. So I currently work in home visiting, and I've been doing that for 3 years. And prior to that, I was in a classroom, a preschool classroom at a private school in Kansas City. But really kind of how I started working with children in general was because I danced my whole life. And so I was a dancer and started dancing at a really young age and then sort of transitioned as I got older into teaching dance to young children. And so I just, as much as I love dance, I realized at some point that my relationship with children was probably really where the sweet spot was. And so I started sort of investigating ways to have, you know, more experiences in other sorts of environments with kids. And so then I started working in caregiving environments, and I also was babysitting and things like that. And then I ended up in a classroom, and I guess the rest is sort of history at this point. But yeah, that's sort of how it began.
I got to ask the question that listeners are wondering about. What kind of dance are we talking? Break? Right. Are we talking tap? Oh. Are we talking jazz? Yeah. Are we talking ballet?
It was all of those things, Jeff. So I grew up in a little, like, you know, kind of a rural community. We had a small dance studio, you know, kind of what you picture when you picture those like small dance studios in a small town. And so I did ballet, tap, and jazz. And I was doing a lot of recitals and performances and things like that as a kid. And then when I went off to college, I went initially to a state school here in Kansas that was just about 30 minutes away from my hometown. And so I had the opportunity to drive back and forth and teach some classes for some of like the youngest dancers. So, you know, those kind of budding ballerinas, those like 3 and 4 year old kiddos. And so I was doing that, and that's kind of how that happened. But yeah, lots of different styles of dance.
But it sounds like ballet is predominant because you were teaching the children that.
Yeah, so those classes were kind of considered like a creative movement. So you're teaching like very basic ballet, but also just a lot of like, you know, like let's do some animal movement, let's do some freeze dance. And, you know, I guess as I started sort of trying to learn more about that in particular, I started to learn a little bit more about brain development and things like that, because, you know, learning a little bit about, obviously I was pretty young, so I was trying to figure out how do I make all these little people want to be here, want to listen to me, want to participate. And so that was sort of like that introduction to, you know, being with them and doing something that they also were loving, which was really fun. So it was sort of a community thing for me.
Oh, okay. This, my brain goes in too many weird, if I wanted to do a dolphin based interpretive freeform dance, what would that look like? Jennifer?
I'm not going to perform for you, Jeff. Okay, but yeah, there would probably be some full some body of, movement.
Kind
of,
oh yeah,
my arms glued to my side, kind of. some undulating. Hey, yes. Listeners, I'll put together an interpretive dance. Maybe I'll record it. Maybe I'll just do it for Tasha later. But I'm going to work on a dolphin dance because that might help me befriend them. Sorry for going so far off topic. Tamara, so get us back on track and ask a thoughtful question.
Yeah, I'm gonna get us back. I think you also do a lot of head dipping into the water, but we'll get back to that later.
Yeah.
So Jen, why dance? What made you want to dance?
So I think I was definitely a child that really enjoyed attention. I was a performer from birth, I suppose. There's lots of really awesome home videos of me when I was a kid putting on like little song and dance performances in the homes of like family members. And I'm just like the star of the show. And there's a lot of like wanting to sparkle and being really interested in that. And it was definitely an interest that was like supported by my family. They were like, yes, that's very girly of you. You go right ahead and do that. And so I think that that's where it started. I'm not an only child. I have a younger sister.
So you're the eldest?
I am, yeah.
And what's the age difference between you and your sister?
My sister is about 3.5 years younger than I am.
Uh-huh.
So
how was that for you when she came along?
It was good. I really enjoyed being a big sister to her. I did not really enjoy sharing my space and things like that. I was very like, I am so important. And so I thought I was really, special, clearly. And so I felt like she was intruding on my space sometimes when we were younger, but we enjoyed playing together. And she's very introverted, not as much now, but like as a child, she was very introverted. And so that was a little confusing to me because I was so incredibly extroverted as a kid. So that was kind of interesting. It allowed me, I guess, to maintain that sort of being, I don't know, kind of a sparkly dancer person, I guess you could say, but yeah.
I would call it self-expressive.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't seem to have a problem with expressing yourself.
No, and I ended up after starting college, I wasn't sure exactly what I wanted to do, but I knew it was something in the fine arts. And so I went to a state school, and when I was there, I was studying visual arts and then dance as well a little bit. And then I ended up going to a private art school. hashtag all your money is now gone and you will have no career in the arts. So I did that and so lots of expression for sure in coming years after being a kid.
Mainly with the body, like dancing, or did you do other things like
so drawing? I ended up, my official degree is in photography and new media from a place called the Kansas City Art Institute. And so I did a lot of like photography, but a lot of my photography consisted of like a lot of body movement while using the camera. So lots of stuff like that, but I haven't practiced art making in probably over a decade at this point.
Uh-huh.
When was the last time you went dancing?
Like actual dancing? Like
you're gonna go out, there's a band playing, you're gonna have a couple cocktails or seltzer waters and you're gonna dance.
That was probably prior to meeting my spouse. Because he hates dancing, hates it. So uncomfortable, the idea of dancing. He's also very introverted, and so like even watching me dance I think makes him uncomfortable. He's just like, there's just too much expression.
Which of your parents was self-expressive and which was more introverted?
My dad is the one who is definitely more extroverted in my family.
Mm-hmm. And your mom not?
No, not at all.
So your sister's like your mom and you like your dad.
A little bit in several ways. Yeah.
So you married your dad? No, your mom.
Oh, no.
You married your mom.
Kind of. Yeah. Sort of. Opinionated, but quiet.
So is that nice? I mean, is that like being home?
Yeah, I mean, I guess in some ways it is. I don't know. Sometimes it's also strange because, you know, I spent like all of my, I guess, formative years around other people who were very involved in like art making and a lot of expression and things like that. And so sometimes I'm like, y'all are kind of stale here. Like my son's also not like super expressive. And so I'm like, sometimes kind of confused by why no one is wanting to sing and dance their way through life like me. But yeah.
Why won't anybody sparkle with me?
Right.
So how was elementary school? Because I've noticed that sometimes the sparkly people end up with labels or struggles in school.
Right. So I am number one rule follower. I'm often made fun of by my husband for this. We have a family joke that when he sees like a do not enter sign, he says, "That's just a suggestion." And I'm over here living by the fact that it says do not enter. I'm like, you can't go there. Don't even look that direction. Stay away. The sign states that we are not to enter. And so I remember one time in particular, he was like, we were getting on an on-ramp to the interstate and there happened to be a really big traffic jam. And he's like, I'm not doing this. And so he turned around on the on-ramp and started coming down the wrong way. And I'm like in a sheer state of panic. I'm like, you can't do this. He's like, but no one's coming. It's fine. We're safe. I'm paying attention. I know what's going on in our environment and you need to trust me. And I'm just like, but it says no. We have to sit in this traffic. And so lots of things like that. So I'm definitely a rule follower. So school was great for me. Got along just fine with teachers and for the most part with other students. Yeah, it was definitely not something that felt like a struggle. It was easy for me to kind of fit in with others.
And what, I mean, what about now? Because when you say things are a bit stale, how can you get the self-expression you want?
You know, that's something that I feel like has been sort of on the back burner of when I was in a classroom with children, I felt like I was always sparkling, right? Because you kind of sometimes that position of like, we're going to sing and dance together. We're going to have so much fun. I'm going to encourage your creative expression. And so I felt like I was with all these other people that are like my people, right? And so now that I'm not in a classroom, I think that there's just less of that in my environment, I guess. And so maybe that's, I need to find a way to reignite that ability to be around expressive people.
And can you, I mean, aren't you in a farm?
Yeah, I live in a really rural area. There's not a lot of people out here. And
there's not even dolphins.
And certainly not a lot of people that want to dance with me.
Look, I've seen The Sound of Music enough to know you don't have to have people who want to dance with you to dance. You can go out in a field and you can spin and twirl. You can dress up like a magical sparkly fairy if you want to. So you can make that happen.
You're probably please. Right. I don't know why I'm not singing and dancing in the pastures. I will give that a try.
Please send video.
So would you say that coming to early childhood was like a secondary thing? It wasn't really what you wanted to do.
You know, it's really interesting to me because I think a lot back on, you know, I I feel like there's just like moments in your life where somebody is sort of waving a flag at you saying, this is the thing, this is what you should do. And I feel like there were times that maybe I ignored those. One of the reasons being that when, you know, you're in high school and things like that, and you're sort of trying to make decisions about maybe what's next for you, I feel like most of my educational experiences, while they were good and positive, and I didn't feel like they were negative or anything like that, I guess they felt really restrictive. Mm-hmm. And so in my mind, teachers are these police officers that just tell people what to do all day. And that is not my jam. And so while I think moving toward education would have been probably the right thing for me to do when I was a young person, I think in my mind, I was like, well, who wants to be a teacher? They just tell people what to do all day. And I don't want to do that. And so I'm going to go be an artist. Which is just so interesting to me now, thinking about that. And I think a lot about that with like educator recruitment and like the struggles, you know, that are happening in this field and just education also in general, beyond just caregiving. When all of our experiences have been these people who want to hold us down or chain us up or whatever, I'm being figurative, hopefully.
Yeah.
I feel like that really inhibits people from seeing what the potential possibilities are, because really some of the best educators I've ever worked with have been people that were not really from the field. Like they were from the arts or other things, and they were just really creative people, because I think being good with young children is also like you have to be creative.
Very interesting, because I think quite a few people who get into to early childhood are not aware of all these things that you're talking about. And I'm sort of sorry for you that you couldn't do what you really, really wanted to do.
Yeah, I think, you know, now, like in hindsight, I have a lot of regrets about like what I did for like my collegiate experience, because I'm like, I spend so much time now thinking about things directly related to the research in this field and reading about those things. And I'm like, why didn't I do all this when I had the time and space as a young person and really could have immersed myself in that? And it would have really served me, obviously, because that is where my career ended up. But instead, you know, I decided I was going to go hang out with all these other art kids. And I met great people and had great experiences in college. It wasn't that, and, you know, I graduated and finished school and all those lovely things. But, you know, there, I do. I have some regrets about that.
You know, Jen, coming from where I'm sitting, like going to be in a couple of months, 74 years old, you seem kind of young still to me. I think you've got a lot of stuff you can still do.
That's very cute, because I'm 39. Yeah. Sometimes I'm like, I should just go back and get my master's and do all and go, you know, do early childhood. And then I'm like, I'm almost 40, and who's going to pay for that? And those types of things, because I do have a lot of interest in, and I do also think, unfortunately, sometimes when opportunities come up in this field, if you don't have specific credentials, you are unfortunately sort of gatekept from certain opportunities, even though maybe you've had experiences in the field and maybe you have a different mindset about certain things. People are just like, but wait, why are you here? You're not one of us. I'm like, you're right, I'm not.
Since you're doing home visits now, maybe you could go towards counseling, but that's something else.
Yeah, that's definitely something else.
It's not your scene.
I don't think so. I think I think I'm more if anything, I would be more interested in working more directly with children right now.
Interesting. So it sounds to me like your earliest childhood was kind of happy. How unusual.
It was happy. Yeah, I would say how unusual. No, I did have a really happy early childhood. I had grandparents that lived on a farm, and so sometimes we would visit there. And then my other grandparents lived in the same town as I did. And my grandma was, you know, she was a younger grandma, and she was very like energetic and wanted to do lots of fun things with us. And she was a music teacher. And so she was a very expressive person. So she was always singing with us and, you know, things like that. And yeah, so it was a pretty fun early childhood.
So did she influence you to want to sing and dance?
I would say she probably did. I hadn't really thought about that, but she was a big fan of movie musicals, and so exposed me a lot to movie musicals as a kid. And so I think those are very inspirational to young, very expressive people. Like you said, Sound of Music, and you're just like, wow, I want to sing and twirl you know, be that person in that movie. And so lots of that with her when I was little.
It's interesting that you said that you liked lots of attention when you were little. Because, you know, I think that if children were honest and could say it, that they all do. I mean, they need it, actually. I mean, if we're talking about my book, like Jeff said, you know, I think it's one of the ways that they learn to develop and survive and so forth. So I don't think you were abnormal by wanting it, but you might have been lucky that you could express it.
Yes, I certainly wasn't. I mean, like I said, there's all these strange home videos of me like singing and twirling around and being really dramatic and expressive. And I was never really told, you know, not to do that or anything like that. I think it was pretty, I think it was just who I was. And so my family was like, well, here she is.
Because she's there in you.
Yeah, I definitely speak my mind, and I do feel like I'm very expressive. I don't like withhold my opinion very frequently or anything like that. So I think there is still a lot of expression, and I do think that's still part of who I am.
Bring something into focus for me, because we went from dancy, working with kids. What's that moment where, what was your first experience in the classroom? How did you find yourself in a classroom with children?
Yeah. So when I was teaching, I worked at a couple of different dance schools. And so once I was teaching dance, and I was also like, it was never a full-time job. And so right after I and my husband started dating, I was looking to find other work in addition to teaching dance. And there was a job open at a franchise childcare center not too far from my home. And I applied for that position as like an assistant in a classroom with 2-year-olds. And it was like super eye-opening to me. I'd worked in like church nurseries and babysitting and things like that as a teenager, but never like in a classroom full of children in a childcare environment. And so the person I worked with was, I don't know what word I want to use. I'm going to just use the word grumpy. She was just a grumpy. She was a grumpy individual. Probably for a few reasons, but she was sort of grumpy, and things felt sort of factory-like to me. It was a school with an accreditation, and it was a school that was a franchise. So there was a lot of like restrictions and rules to how things were kind of done there. And I thought, well, this is really interesting. And it was really kind of my first, you know, glimpse at what that would look like. Because I'd never really been in a formal care environment myself, either my mom or a family member or my, we had like a neighborhood sort of babysitter that, you know, took care of us. Like, and so I'd never really been in, you know, a childcare setting like that. And so it was really interesting to me.
I think it's called Kentucky Fried Childcare.
Yeah, I think it is called Kentucky Fried Childcare.
Looking back, should it have been accredited?
They had, you know, they had the big
that was a long pause.
Well, you know, and here's the thing. That was my first experience of learning about what like NACE accreditation looks like and things like that. Mm. And there were a lot of like really, and it was before, you know, cell phone cameras were a thing. And I remember we had to have the children make art. And then we had to have photographs of them making the art. And then they had to be up on the wall and you had to change that out like monthly or something. And I just kept thinking, like, coming from an art background, I'm like, this is not art making. And this is not really great documentation. And all these things that I didn't even really, you know, this was my first experience in a classroom. And I didn't feel settled with how it felt in terms of like the children's creative expression. And I also didn't feel great about the fact that I was taking so much time away from my interactions with the children or my observations of the children to like put the things on the wall, right? Or whatever the rules are, the requirements.
So yeah, and they didn't allow you, I mean, you didn't feel comfortable to change things up a bit.
No, for a couple of reasons. First of all, I was definitely the new person uh-huh. and was the least experienced person on the staff. And also just like, I don't know, I guess I'm like, well, is this what this looks like? Is this how this works? This just seems, you know, really not what I would have expected. So.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Oh, boy, I would have loved to have had you in my center. I would have sent you to all kinds of wonderful training things.
How yes. did the relationship with your grouchy coworker develop? Did she end up becoming a marvelous mentor and you see each other no. a couple of times a month now? Or
no, she definitely wasn't a marvelous mentor. I would say one of the things I remember about her in particular that is super funny was that when the children would lay down to rest at nap time, she would also lay down to rest and she would sleep the entire nap time. She was pregnant and I think she was probably uncomfortable and very tired, but she would just lay down and sleep. And I just always thought, well, here we are. You
know? I've never heard that before.
She just laid down and slept. She would be patting backs, you know, or whatever that happens, you know, to settle folks. And she would just fall asleep herself.
Is she still working in the field? Could we get a hold of her and do her journey tomorrow?
She's not still working in the field.
I'd love to do her journey.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I don't think she lasted a super long time.
So it doesn't sound like an ideal introduction to the profession. What kept you around? Did things get better?
I didn't stay in that role for very long. I ended up having more opportunities to do more work teaching dance. And so I was kind of focused on that. And then there was this school I kept hearing about that was sort of near my home and near my husband's work. And I was kind of hearing like a little buzz about it. And so I started kind of looking into it. And it was a Reggio-inspired school in Kansas City that was started by also another person who was outside of education. And she was, she had worked at a children's museum in Chicago and had lived in Reggio for a few years and married an Italian fellow and had come back to Kansas City and decided to start this school. And so I kind of sent her you know, like a resume, I think, or maybe I just a note saying, hey, I'm kind of interested in learning more about your school and what it is you do. And I'm kind of looking for maybe some part-time work. I teach dance. I have worked in a center before. And I feel like she maybe called me the same day and had me come in. And when she opened the door for the interview, she immediately embraced me. Like in a huge hug, and I'm like, yeah, just like disgusted.
Good Lord. And I was like, yes. How could you ever have been with children? We'll talk about that next week.
Sure, sure.
That's a good one. That's a great topic. But yeah, and I was like, this is different. And the school was, it is the most beautiful environment I've ever personally been in that was designed for children. And I was just captivated. It was just absolutely captivating. The environment, her personality, just the entire vibe, I guess, of the school. And she said, can you start tomorrow?
Oh, how exciting.
And so I worked there part-time while I still taught dance. And then eventually I ended up working there full-time. And my son went to school there until we moved. And so that's sort of when the meat of like my time in the classroom and working more collaboratively with folks that were amazing mentors kind of came into play.
So specifically, what were some of the big differences you noticed between those two programs?
There couldn't have been more differences, but one difference was that behaviors were not looked at in such a negative light like they were at my previous. There was a lot of shame and a lot of there were children that were clearly labeled bad and clearly labeled good, I felt like, in that environment. And I was really confused by that, and I was also really like unsure of how to approach that because I just tend to not really feel like that about people at all. And so that was really different to that and that things were so, the image of the child was such a focus, and I'd never encountered anything like that in my life. And I was just absolutely captivated by it.
So that was the biggest. You mean the second place?
Yes.
Can you expand on that a little bit? What you mean?
So the school was really project-based, and the children were really leading the work, and the environments were all really formulated with children in mind. Like, we had a kids' kitchen where children could come and cook. We had it with our like school chef, and we had a lot of opportunities for kids to be involved in food making and preparing our dining area. The environments were really welcoming. There was like a really good energy in the space. And so it was just really different.
And they saw the whole child. They didn't see a sort of child as a sum of its behaviors.
Sure, as a sum of its behaviors. And the child was very respected. Their thoughts were very much, you know, children were asked questions, which I had never... I had never seen anything like, you know, sitting in what we would call like a morning meeting. I'd never experienced children being asked a question and asked to elaborate on what they mean, and children directing the conversation, and not it being just a call and response of like letters and numbers kind of. I just never seen anything like that. And I was like, well, this is where I want to be.
And the weather, did they?
The weather. Yeah. So like when we had a morning meeting, it might just be like a question, just like, how are you feeling today? Or what makes you happy? Or, what do you think about snails? Or I don't know. I mean, it could just be anything. And it might, it was probably related to something that happened the previous day, or,
right.
You know, something like that. And so, child, yeah, it was definitely
child sensitive and interesting to children.
Yes, very interesting to children. And so, yeah, it was just, I I sort of just fell in love with being in that environment and being with those children. And so that ended up being what I did.
Well, maybe you can open your own.
Rural Kansas and childcare. It's definitely a childcare desert out here for sure. Where I live, it's a large problem.
Right, right. So what happened? Children are homeschooled mainly?
Children are not homeschooled. Children go to public school, but for early childhood, it's challenging because there's not a lot of care. There's not a lot of childcare centers here. And there are some in-home childcare, family childcare, but it's not super prevalent. It's very challenging because a lot of people commute. Uh-huh. And so families are sometimes gone, 10 plus hours a day. And so there's a lot of challenges for people.
Mm-hmm. So when you say you have regrets, you would go back to early childhood if you could?
If I could do it all over again, I would have studied early childhood from the beginning.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But you have, actually.
I have. And so I feel like I had a great experience because I was really, the school that I worked at, we did a lot of professional development time and a lot of reflection time and a lot of collaboration with our peers and our supports. And so we just had a lot of opportunities to really dive further in. And I think part of that was because the founder of the school, she clearly learned a lot of this sort of on the job, right? And so she knew that some of her teachers were learning that way, and she really wanted people to continue to ask questions and reflect. And I think that was a big reason for that.
Sounds like heaven.
It was really amazing. It was a really amazing school.
And how did your son enjoy it? You said he went to that program. Did it just start in preschool, or was it the early infant toddler stuff there too, or what was going on?
Yeah, so they started school at 2 there, 2 and potty trained. So the first, when I first had him, I was still teaching dance. And so my husband and I were kind of working opposite schedules. And so we were handing him off, and be like, okay, I've got to go to work. You just got home. Here's a baby. And I'd run to work, and I did a lot of things with, the children were doing performances and things like that on the weekends. And so I'd have him surrounded by all these little dancers all the time. And it was kind of a hectic and crazy time. So then I had this opportunity to take a full-time job and leave teaching dance. And that was going to give me the opportunity to send him to the school as well. And that was something that was important to me. So for 1 year, he attended a different childcare down the street while I worked full time at the school I was working at. And then when he was 2, he joined me, and he was not in my classroom, but in the next door classroom. And it was really great because I remember we had this beautiful circle window between the 2 classrooms so we could see each other throughout the day. And then I would see him at lunch and on the playground and things like that. So it was the best thing because I got to see him all day in lots of different contexts. I got to see him with his peers and see him interact with his teachers. But then I also was able to, work and develop professionally and things like that at the same time.
It makes it more clear to me why you're so understanding that he can do woodworking and use that saw that we were talking about.
Right.
Because I'm sure there was a lot of hands-on sort of researchy stuff going on.
Yeah, and he was doing a lot of working with a lot of materials and things like that. But I mean, he's been that person since he emerged. My favorite picture of him is, I'll have to send it to you. He was 18 months old, and we were in a Lowe's or a Home Depot or something. And he found the, the red gas cans. He found some of those, and he just picked up a pair of them, and he was and he would not put them down. He's just walking through the store with these gas cans, and I'm like, this is metaphor for the rest of my life as a parent, because he is just determined to set things on fire.
He didn't know they were guests, did he?
Both figuratively and and not so much. So
I like this kid. I like this.
Oh, he's a lot.
So the only reason you left that program is the move.
Yeah, that was the big reason. I didn't want to commute anymore. And, you know, a lot had changed during COVID, and we had been trying to do some sort of like online platform of learning, which was not really working. And it kind of drained, you know, a lot of my mental resources. And I was ready for something new in terms of where we were living. So it was a good time to make a transition for our family in terms of that. But
and so now you're doing home visits. What's that? Listeners, you may remember Jen from, she did an episode with Tamar and I a while back about specifically about home visits. But what's that transition been like? Are your needs being met? Is it something you're going to do for a long time? What's your trajectory now?
Well, home visiting is great. I like home visiting. I love the service of home visiting. I think that it's a tremendous service for people to take advantage of. The one thing I will say about me personally is that because I connect so much with actual children, and I'm in home visiting, my role is really to connect with the parents and help them in their engagement with their own child. Sometimes it's challenging for me because kids just want to crawl up in my lap and want me to read to them or want me to play with them, and I just want to play with them too. And so that can be a little bit challenging because I do miss the sort of classroom environment or the caregiving environment of where I'm working more directly with children. So I don't know what the future holds for me. I'm always kind of looking for what's going to be that next step, because I feel like I'm still learning so much, and mm-hmm. and that's so much a part of where I am right now is learning more and doing more and having more experiences. So, and I'm definitely not one to feel like, and maybe it's because I've changed what direction I'm going so many times in my lifetime. But I just like the idea of constantly doing something new. So I don't know what's next.
How old is your son?
He is about to turn 7.
Ah. Mm-hmm. This is a good age for you because you can start to see what you'd like to do.
Yeah, he's in first grade this year, and it's interesting because he's in school, and school is school. And so and sometimes I'm that person who's constantly sending the email, asking the questions, advocating. And so that's been an interesting part of all this journey too, right? Is like, I feel like I know what's right and what's okay. And so I sometimes tend to open my mouth. Well, there's that expression piece. The principal's got my expression.
I might be wrong here, but I think what Tamar was hinting at, that since he's in school full time, you are freed up a little bit more than when he was younger to maybe focus on what that next step in your journey is going to be.
Yeah, I guess it really is. It is a good time for that. Yeah, I wish I knew what that thing was going to be.
You know, when I was 40, I changed my whole life. My whole life.
Tell me more.
I mean, really, I left Israel where I had lived for 20 years. I brought my son, came to America, got a doctorate within the next 10 years, wrote books, started doing all sorts of things. I had just been, not just, because I loved it. I had been a preschool teacher for probably 11, 12 years in Israel. So, and then I became a professor and blah, blah, blah. But 40 is a great time to change your whole life.
I like that. I like hearing that because I feel like there's a lot of school of thought of like, it's time to close up shop, put your feet, your stake in the sand. This is where you need to be.
Good Lord.
I don't know. I hear that from people like, you need to make a decision about what you're doing.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. It's ongoing. I'm going to be 74 and I'm still thinking about it.
Sure.
Just don't do anything that's going to be too scary for your husband, because he sounds like a good guy, and too much chaos is going to scare him. But
you're exactly right, Jeff. You're exactly right.
You gotta live your life too. So you gotta find that balance. Hey honey, I'm moving to New York to pursue my love of dance. That might be a little extreme, but I mean, find some good balance in there. Don't sure. go crazy.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yes. I have to be careful because I might be responsible for something terrible.
Sure. Yeah. And me being the voice of restraint, that doesn't sound like my yes. usual MO, but
he's been in his job for like 25 years and he's 8 years older than I am. And so I think watching me bebop along through all these ups and downs and ebbs and flows and, you know, trying to figure out what the thing is, I think sometimes just like is a lot for him mentally, understandably.
Well, at least you're out in the country, yeah. So he can go for a long drive and contemplate it. So that's probably good.
I think we're all in mixed marriages, aren't we? Because we're all so different.
Mixed merit? What depends well, what you mean by mixed, I guess.
People used to say that about mixed race marriages and mixed this or mixed that. But I think we're all in a kind of mix.
You got to have a little bit of yin and a little bit of yang, right? I mean, it's
quite a lot of each of it.
Yeah. You got to find that balance.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, you're just a pup. You've got, I'm going to make a note, put it on the calendar. 10 years from now, we'll have to do a follow-up interview to find out what part two of the story. But look,
I'll be alive.
You'll only be 80, 83, 84. That's, you'll still be a spring chicken. But I mean, if you decide to go back and pursue more formal education, it's never been easy to do that because there are a lot of great programs that you can do, if not everything, much of it online. And if you want to keep it informal, you can totally do that. I've had a delightful career in the profession being a dropout. I mean, so there are many paths to being successful in the early learning field. So you just got to figure out what that path is going to be or what you want that next thing to be.
I like this career encouragement, and you guys are like my high school counselors now.
That's I think if you have a photograph of when you were little doing all that self-expressive stuff, a photograph that you really like of yourself, pin it up somewhere and just have a look at it every now and again.
I like that idea, Tamar.
Yeah.
Something I wanted to touch on before we wrap up. You talked about the photography. Did you ever get a chance in the good program you worked in? The what we would call higher quality program. Did you ever get a chance to use? Do you had to use that experience and that interest as far as documenting kids learning the way you kind of felt it should happen, especially once the world went digital with photography?
Well, yes. So when I was working there, I will say that was one of the great things about that program was that the documentation was so high quality. And we had many different types of documentation, one, you know, being in the classroom for the children to view, as well as, you know, whomever adult was in the classroom, but also like through blogs and things like that. And so we always had cameras available to us. And so I loved being able to, you know, photograph children in the process of making and learning. And I wish I got to do more of that. I think that that is, I also loved doing that in order to allow the adults in their lives that were not present in those moments to have that window to their day and that, and that window to seeing their child in charge of their learning or being in that really expressive moment. Because I feel like sometimes as caregivers of, or parents specifically of children, like there are charges, right? And we're, you know, we're just kind of managing the day. And sometimes we don't really see them as the individual expressive beings that they are. And I feel like sometimes those images really allowed for parents to kind of see their children differently.
Absolutely.
That's really why I loved home visiting, because I got to see the child in their home as that person, not as the group all the time.
Sure.
So I get your next step in your journey for you. You start a business, you start a play documentation business, and then you just have a kind of a monthly, you put out a monthly charge. You show up at a program once a month or once every couple of weeks with your digital camera. You do high quality documentation about what's going on in the program. They pay you your monthly subscription fee, and then you also do some training on how to provide and create high quality documentation. You just make that your gig. Then you're working in early learning and you're working with the artsy fartsy side of things.
Sounds fabulous.
It does sound fabulous.
It really sounds.
You've got a big metro area there. I mean, that the program you worked at isn't the only high quality program in that community, I'll tell you what. And so even with just a small group of programs where you were doing in-service trainings for the staff about documentation and supplementing it with stuff they could use in their advertising and their marketing and their brochures and all that kind of stuff.
My mind is blown because that sounds lovely.
And I just asked for a simple 3.5%.
I couldn't blame you for that.
No, you can have the idea. Just
a while, really.
just a little thanks, Jeff, down in the corner of the website once it's up and running would be sufficient for me. But I mean, you can invent who you want to be.
Boy, Jeff, I wish I'd met you many years ago.
Yeah, well, I mean,
doesn't everybody?
Oh my gosh.
The answer to that is absolutely no. Not everybody wishes that. What haven't we asked you that we should have asked you about?
Yeah. What do you want to tell us?
Gosh, I don't know. Other than maybe, I'm not really sure what else I should tell you. But other than thanks for the career advice. And this gives me a lot to think about, because I oftentimes feel really, I don't know, like I just come up against a lot of barriers, like I said, you know, not coming from specifically from the ed field, and that I do have a lot of experiences and a lot of different kinds of things now, but I'm always just unsure as to like what that next step is. But I think that this gives me a lot to think about. And I love reflecting on how my childhood experiences, you know, play into my, my current.
Yeah. I mean, this kind of search for self is an interesting journey, isn't it?
It is. And I've had to do a lot with that specifically with my kiddo personally, because he is so adventurous and so capable. And I, you know, I had a lot of ideas about what was and was not appropriate for children when I first started working, not only at that school, but started parenting. And those things were kind of simultaneous. And so I had to kind of rethink a lot of my own experiences and like, why do I think kids can't use jigsaws or whatever? And it's because, you know, somebody was telling me that I shouldn't.
Sure.
And in what places that sort of held me back, and so this whole conversation is really coming full circle, because maybe some of the thoughts about what I can't do professionally are because of what I've been told by others, and rather than listening to myself or my intuition.
You probably saw a sign someplace that said you couldn't do something, and then you took that as truth.
You're right. Do not enter. You don't have your bachelor's in fine arts. You don't belong
here. Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in line with your husband. If there's a sign that says "do not touch," my fingerprints are all over it. It's just one of the ways you can go through life. I'm not sure it's a good way, but Tasha and I were in Hawaii. Well, I mean, Tasha and I were in Hawaii. I did a presentation there, and we're in Volcano National Park, and there's these steam vents, and there are lots of signs that say, "Hey, don't put your hands in the steam." And of course I put my hands in the steam, and then I ended up with this rash that apparently was little bits of volcanic glass embedded in my skin or something. I don't know, but, So, I mean, but would I do it again? Absolutely.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of things like that. And in like my household, because my kid has two parents that sort of like live on opposite ends of that spectrum mentally. And so sometimes I think he is just like, I just have to trust myself, because these jokers are gonna be like, what's okay for me at this moment. I'm just gonna do this.
He knows who to ask when he wants to do something, though.
You're totally right. I mean, so we have in our barn like a, what are those? A scissor lift in our barn right now. Mm-hmm. And so one of his friends was out recently, and we had kind of told him like, you know, she might not feel comfortable going up in the scissor lift with you and all these things. And he told me, he was like, I asked her and she felt comfortable, so I took her up in the scissor lift and I showed her what all I can do in the scissor lift. And I'm over there just like, don't tell her parents that I let you roll her around in the scissor lift and take her, you know, 20 feet in the air.
That sounds like a delightful child. Sounds like a delightful childhood. Tamar, any final thoughts before we wrap up?
No, I just love talking to Jen.
Jen has been delightful.
Yeah.
I love talking to both of you, and I can't thank you enough for letting me do it.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate it. Adds to the quality of the show, having people like Jen stop by. Hey, listeners, I'm going to throw this out there because listeners, you're kind of the reason I decided to do this thing I wasn't planning on doing. Over at explorationsearlylearning.com, you can go to explorationsearlylearning.com/playhaven if you want to be part of the early learning community of practice I'm putting together, because I heard from enough people who were feeling isolated or disconnected or needing support, and they were kind of wanting to move away from the social media into someplace a little bit more cozy and comfy. So we're giving that a try, but for it to work, actual human beings have to show up and engage and communicate and share. So my thing is, I'm gonna put some time and energy into it. I figure there's a 10% chance that it's going to be successful, but you gotta try new things once in a while. Otherwise life gets boring. So if you want to check it out, there's probably a link in the show notes too. And there's probably a link to Everybody Needs Attention by Tamar Jacobson. This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. Thanks for listening. Back soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
There we go. We made a podcast. This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.